And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM, just like the man said. We're going to be speaking today to David Heap about the Freedom Flotilla, which is being organized as we speak. And later in the show, we will be talking to Fred Jerome. This will be a second interview with Fred Jerome regarding Albert Einstein and the issue of racism. And so that will be up in the second half. But I believe we're joined right now by David Heap. Are you there?
Hi, Phil. David Heap here.
Hey, thanks an awful lot, David. I'll bet you're a busy guy. You have four boats. Am I right? And they're going to
We do. We do. Yeah. We do. There are four flotilla boats floating now for a month and a half. It's been that long? Yeah, it has. It's been since the end of April for one of them. Mm-hmm. And we'll be going until the end of July. So it's a marathon event.
And
the team effort with lots of people involved.
And the destination is Gaza.
Destination, as always, is Gaza. From international waters to Palestinian waters to Gaza.
Well, why has this been necessary? I know that the expression is end the blockade. Why are the people of Gaza in a blockade situation? Whose territory is it? And why does Israel interfere with traffic in and out of Gaza?
Well, that's a good question for Israel, but we are concerned about the right of freedom of movement of Palestinians. We're concerned about Palestinian human rights in general, but in particular, the right of freedom of movement, which is denied systematically to Palestinians everywhere. I mean, the right to, what it says in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is everyone has the right to move around their country, to leave their country, and return to the country. Their country. And each of those things is denied to Palestinians everywhere. Palestinians in the West Bank fix checkpoints to go just a few kilometers from their home. Lots of Palestinians can't leave. Lots of Palestinians can't go home. Ones who are in the diaspora are in camps. But the ones who are under the biggest, most severe restrictions are Palestinians in Gaza, who are on part of their historic territory. Most of them, more than two-thirds of them, come from other parts of Palestine where they can't return to. So that's one. You know, the right of return is denied to them. The horrible conditions in Gaza are, in many cases, due to overcrowding. It's one of the most densely populated places in the world. Mm-hmm. But if you think that two-thirds of those people should be elsewhere in Palestine in their historic homes, that speaks to the overcrowded conditions and the poverty and the unemployment and the terrible environmental degradation, the terrible drinking water conditions and sewage conditions and then everything else you can think of. So that's the crowded conditions, and the lack of the restrictions on freedom of movement have been a crackdown actually for the better part of 30 years. They began in the early 90s. They started preventing them from traveling to other parts of historic Palestine. They were working in the state of Israel or trading with the West Bank. Got worse in the 2000s and got really bad after 2006 when Palestinians had the first free and fair elections, and they had the temerity to elect somebody that their occupier didn't like. Mm-hmm. Israel didn't like the people that they elected, even though the international observers said they were, you know, free and fair elections. And so they, you know, they do what imperial powers do when people have the temerity to elect the wrong governments, and they lock them down. So there's been this most severe denial of the right of freedom of movement since 2007. Mm-hmm. And since almost that long, when the blockade was imposed, of course, Canada under Harper jumped right on board. And so this blockade happens because our governments are complicit with it, right? It's allowed to continue. And since 2008, civil society organizations and, you know, people of conscience around the world have been failing to break the blockade and say, no, we believe that they should have the right of freedom of movement. Mm-hmm. Well, now, so that's what's happening, and it's been happening for a while.
Yeah.
And well, we're at it again.
You couldn't have anticipated, I know, that you've been at this for a number of years, but mm-hmm. What a combination of events as you're preparing for your attempt to reach the people of Gaza. We had the President of the United States make this dramatic show of moving his embassy, U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem, which really increased, everybody understood, increased mm-hmm. tensions. And then subsequent to that, we've had this show of a return march of the people, of the Palestinians, going near the border of Israel and with a serious loss of life with the Israeli soldiers actually targeting them. And now, now in this context, you have this. So I should tell our listeners, this is, people can support the effort, CanadaBoatGaza.org. And you also have a Twitter site, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's at CanadaBoatGaza, at Gaza Flotilla, with, and it's
F Flotilla. Yeah, for Freedom Flotilla. So Gaza,
yeah, so Gaza F, yeah,
for the Twitter, and CanadaBoatGaza.org, indeed.
I'm really glad, by the way, you have those. The beauty of this kind of communication, we're able to follow what you're doing. I was very impressed. I don't know, was the boat that you're most associated with, Al-Ada. I don't know which boat it was, but one of them went to Brighton.
And, yes, they did.
And two MPs wrote good, excellent statement. The members of Parliament, the British Parliament.
Yes. So this is one of the exciting, the reason we have such a long, if you like, pre-voyage before the destination in the eastern end of the Mediterranean when we sail towards Gaza, is that we learned a number of years ago that it's the most important thing is to reach lots of people in lots of places that can connect to us around, if you like, the media blockade, right? Because in addition to the physical blockade on freedom of movement for Palestinians in Gaza, there's a problem with, of course, just information about what's going on there. And apart from independent media like yours and CIUT, you know, the corporate media doesn't really cover the real situation. So we need to...
Not at all.
Well, we've discovered it. Yeah. So we connect with people. And yeah, this was the first time flotilla boat stopped in an English mainline port. So the Freedom, which is a 21-meter yacht out of Sweden, stopped there last week. And it was quite the event. There was... Labour member of Parliament, a Green member of Parliament, and a Euro member of Parliament as well from the Brighton region that supported it. And that puts pressure, you see, on the there's a split in the UK Labour caucus. Their leader is pretty pro-Palestinian, Jeremy Corbyn, and a lot of the newer MPs, but some of the old guard from the Blair days, you know, they're cautious establishment types, and so they need to feel it. And their other MP from the Brighton area is certainly feeling it from his constituents, because he didn't come out in support of it. And there's pressure on him now to leave Labour Friends of Israel, if you can imagine, and, you know, be responsive to what the constituents are saying in Brighton. So I think this is one of the benefits of sailing to so many different ports in different countries, yes, is that, you know, in each place the conditions are different, but in each place we see this array of civil society support for Palestinian rights in general and for freedom of movement for Palestinians in Gaza.
Yeah.
Another first, if I may. So those two boats, the Al-Auda, as you say, the return, which links to the return march, where Palestinians are, as you say, walking to the fence that separates them from historic Palestine, and get, you know, being shot at, more than 120 of them shot dead by Israeli snipers, and thousands of them horribly wounded by the same snipers. You know, clear violation of international law. There's no justification for firing on unarmed demonstrators. So we have the Al-Auda, which we named last year. We said we're going to have a boat called Return, because this is 70 years since the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, 70 years since the Nakba, as it's called in Arabic, the catastrophe. So our other boat that came from Norway, that started in April, did part of the same route. So they went around the coast of Norway and Sweden and joined up with Freedom and another boat, smaller boats from Sweden. And then they all sailed to Denmark through German ports to Amsterdam together. The two smaller boats took another route. I'll get to that in a minute. And Al-Auda and Freedom sailed the Atlantic. So they Freedom went to Brighton, Al-Auda went to Jersey, another first in the Channel Islands, and then to La Rochelle on the French coast, and met up with Freedom in Gijón in northern Spain, and now they're headed into tomorrow. They're going to be into Lisbon, so they're covering a lot of ports. And as I say, in every port, there's a warm welcome from local civil society. You know, peace associations, human rights groups, trade unionists come out and greet it, and just regular folks come. They're curious. They want to know why these people are here, so they come and learn about the boats and learn a little bit about the issues as well, which is important. The other first.
Go ahead.
Sorry, if I may.
Please.
The other first is that the two small boats, so there's two 9-meter sailboats out of Sweden called Mered and Falastine. So Falastine is Palestine in Arabic. And Mered is named for Mered McGuire, the Nobel Peace Laureate out of Northern Ireland, who sailed on the women's boat to Gaza 2 years ago, but also on other flotillas. Those two did something else we've never done before. They took the river and canal route through Netherlands, Belgium, and northern France, and yesterday they sailed through Paris. Well, they're motoring through the canals. Their sails are down.
Made it to Paris?
They were through Paris yesterday, and I was with them. I joined them. I'm here in Paris for this stretch, and I joined them. They sailed from left from Agnières on the west side of Paris through metropolitan Paris. So lovely images we'll be posting now of, you know, Freedom Flotilla with the Statue of Liberty, the little one here in Île-aux-Cygnes, Freedom Flotilla with Eiffel Tower so far. We were supposed to stop at the Institute of the Arab World, l'Institut du Monde Arabe, IMA, which is a famous thing just by the Île Saint-Louis, but we were escorted the whole way by the River Brigade of the Metropolitan Police that wouldn't let us land in downtown Paris. They inspected us.
And despite being inspected, by the way, right? They came aboard and inspected.
We didn't let them on board. They stopped us. There's a lock just on the west side of Paris, and they looked at every paper on the boat for both of the Swedish captains, looked at every piece of equipment they could imagine, you know, fire extinguishers and anchors and all this sort of stuff. And when they couldn't find any more rules to enforce, they told us there was no permit for landing, for tying up anywhere in Paris. So that they enforced with their Zodiacs. But, I mean, the great thing is this ridiculous overreaction by the River Brigade of the police, which, you know, it's the prefecture, the Ministry of Interior for the Paris area, but it also is the mayor of Paris behind all of this sort of thing. This ridiculous overreaction, of course, it made us much more visible for all kinds of tourists who were out on a sunny Sunday afternoon in Paris with these two riverboats basically harassing two small sailboats.
And you had banners on the boats. I urge people to go online and look at the pictures.
Yep, have a look at the pictures. There's a video on our site. They told us we couldn't have banners either. So they just were making up rules as they went along. And they got through Paris just fine. I got off and came back to Paris to do some work here. And they are headed on down. They're going to, there's part of the Seine, and then there's a couple of canals, and they'll be at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. Date to be announced. They'll be in Lyon, where there's another warm welcome for them, and then they're going to head down the road to the Mediterranean, where they will meet up with the other boats coming from the Atlantic. Wow. So there's a two-part flotilla, if you like, and for the first time, we're through the center of France. So it's all about meeting more people. Lots more people came out in Paris to meet them. There will be more people in Lyon and in other ports.
Yeah.
So there's a number of firsts this time.
Yeah, we're speaking to David Heap, Freedom Flotilla Coalition, and of course CanadaBoatGaza.org. Make sure you go to the site. Tell us about some of the people aboard. You have quite a combination. I know you interviewed Heather Milton Lightning, and could you tell us about her?
So Heather is an Indigenous activist from, I'm going to name the treaty here, and I want to make sure I get it right. I believe it's Treaty 6, otherwise known as Saskatchewan. Yeah, sorry, Treaty 4 area. Nehiyaw, Cree, Anishinaabe, Niitsitapi, Blackfoot, Lakota, Dakota, and Welsh. She works in, you know, Native youth movement, Aboriginal youth initiatives in Anishinaabe clan system, but also an environmental activist. So very much attached to the right of Indigenous people to control their land and make decisions about their land. So that's a connection with Palestinians, of course. Mm-hmm. And then she was there from Copenhagen. She had to go home. We have another participant on board now. That's Ron Rousseau, who's an Aboriginal trade unionist from Whitehorse. He's president of his local of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, and he is Indigenous vice president of the Canadian Labor Congress. And he's been on since...
From the Canadian Labor Congress. That's progress.
Indigenous vice president. It is. It's speaking to, you know, organized labor at another level. Mm-hmm. We've had trade unions before, but never somebody of that position in the House of Labor. And I had the privilege of interpreting for Ron in La Rochelle. He met some French postal workers, and they talked about many issues in common. Hello? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. There's a little click there.
Oh,
yeah, they talked
ahead.
About many issues they have in common, privatization and keeping public service jobs, but also about human rights in Palestine.
Yeah. Now, also, in the past, there have been people, you've had Israelis be part of your, the flotilla. Are there Israelis participating this time?
There are. The boat leader, in fact, we have a sort of a collective leadership in the flotilla, but the The one who is on board as boat leader is named Zohar Chamberlain Regev. She's a Israeli citizen, also a European citizen. She resides in Spain, and she's been part of the leadership of our Spanish partner in the coalition called Rumbo a Gaza on the way to Gaza for many years. And this time she's the coordinator on boat, so she has all kinds of work to do on the boat, but she also speaks and does interviews when we're in port. She's the owner of the Zaytuna Olive, the women's boat to Gaza from a year and a half ago, which is still making its way through the Israeli court system. And she's, you know, committed anti-occupation activist who takes risks for her beliefs. And she will be going all the way to the end. Some of these others are getting on and off. So Ron will get off. Other Canadian participants will get on.
Well, that's another good idea.
One of the ones will be going to the end. Well, it's such a long voyage, you know. It's over 2 months. Yeah, so
Of them are becoming real sailors. I mean, I see the reports of, well, last night we had rough seas, you know, and I do not envy them. I've had the experience.
Yeah. Out there in the Atlantic off the Bay of Biscay and the Atlantic coast of Spain and Portugal, it can get quite rough, there's also Charlie Andreasen, I'll just mention one other, who is a Swedish sailor. I met in 2012. He was sailing on the Estelle from Sweden. He was intercepted then. He came and worked in Gaza on the project called Gaza's Ark when we were sailing out. We were making a ship seaworthy in Gaza to sail out with exports to challenge the blockade from the inside out. He worked there for a better part of a year. He was there for the 2014 assault on Gaza, the Israeli aggression. Unfortunately, the Ark was targeted and shelled and burned in that aggression, but he stayed and worked as with the International Solidarity Movement as a human shield when they were attacking hospitals. The Israelis were attacking a hospital. He went back to Sweden, and he sailed again in 2015 with the Marianne out of Gothenburg. And he's back again. And in between, he's done other things, including, you know, rescuing refugees crossing the Mediterranean in small, frail crafts. So he's a all-around human rights activist kind of guy and a sailor, and Charlie's sailing again with us. So we're really excited to have him. For shorter periods, we have people like Euro MPs some of our partners from around the world. We have Malaysians from an NGO in Malaysia. We'll be joined later by folks from Australia and New Zealand. So it's really quite an international effort. There was an Israeli photojournalist and parliamentary assistant on the early stretches as well. A couple of Americans as well. So it's an all-around mixed crew, and that's what makes the effort so powerful, is it's not just one group of people in one place. It's a very diverse group of people from different places.
Yeah. You know, reading at CanadaBoatGaza.org and on the Twitter at CanadaBoatGaza at Gaza F Flotilla, you actually have this momentum here. People don't understand. You actually are doing better in the realm of fundraising and gathering in support over the years.
Yep. It definitely builds over the years. We've, as you say, we have people coming on and supporting us individually. We have trade unions coming on board. There is a real shift. You know, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, who sent Ron Rousseau, was a pioneer in their position on Palestine. But other trade unions are coming on board in Canada, for example. So, you know, you have a position taken last year about Palestinian human rights by Unifor, largest private sector union in Canada. So we're seeing other people coming around, which, you know, eventually if the House of Labour comes around, it will have an influence on the New Democratic Party, who came very close to taking a position on sanctions at their federal convention or at least debating a position on
sanctions. Well, their new leader made a stronger statement than any I've seen previous the situation in Gaza.
Exactly. So I think there's change afoot, let's put it that way. And as you say, it's gathering momentum. For the first time, we have, you know, Canadian participants from coast to coast, from Newfoundland. There's a Palestinian-Canadian physician getting on. Majid Qureshi is getting on in Lisbon. There's another Canadian participant getting on in one of the Mediterranean stops, and then another Indigenous Canadian participant getting on for the last stretch. Mm-hmm. So your folks should stay tuned and listen to the diverse and interesting people who are getting on board from Canada, as well as all the other countries involved in our coalition.
Yeah. Well, we want to keep track of it, so we'd be intending to talk to you in the future if you could take a break from all the things you've got to do. This is David Heap. I want to mention, now, The plan is, I understand it, it's that the boat you call the Return, Al Ada, you want to make, it's a Norwegian fishing ship, you'd like to make that a gift to the fishermen of Gaza, is that right?
That's right. So the fishers of Gaza, you know, people just trying to make a living, feed their families, feed their communities. They're in a coastal area, there's a traditional fishery that they've done forever, have a really hard time of it. They should have at least 20 nautical miles of access to the sea by international agreements. Any state in the world, any people in the world have at least 12 nautical miles of access to their own territorial waters. They don't even get 6 miles out these days before getting shot at, and often at 3 miles out they get shot at, which means there basically isn't anything to fish. I mean, the inland waters are shallow and there's not much there. They're heavily contaminated because of the blockade. Sewage treatment plants have been damaged and not repaired. They get bombed, right? I mean, terrorist sewage plants, right? There's no power to run them a lot of the time, and there's no parts to fix them. So the waters are contaminated. They don't contain a lot of fish. But these fishers go out anyway to try to get what they can and get shot at. Their boats get damaged. So a gift of a boat is a gift of a livelihood for many families, whether it's the 9-meter, you know, sailboats out of Sweden, or whether it's the larger fishing boat out of Norway. Any of these boats would be a gift, very concrete, very tangible gift to them. Yeah. As always, our most important cargo is human solidarity, though. It's the message that the people of the world haven't forgotten the Palestinians of Gaza. Our governments somehow managed to simultaneously cover their eyes and cover their ears and sit on their hands and do nothing about Gaza. But human solidarity doesn't forget them. Civil society organizations like ours don't forget them. And that's the most important cargo, the most important message of all of this.
Yeah. I want to mention, raise it, we have a presidential candidate, Bernie Sanders, who's he posted on his Twitter, and I love Twitter now, but a nice video where Gazans talked, and they said, we're not pushed around by Hamas or the PLO or anybody else. We want this situation to end. And he posted that. I thought it was a very eloquent, you know, so the people could actually see real Gazans talk and answer the accusations they made against them. But the other thing they underlined, and I want you to talk about, is that this point that this is, we cannot say the situation, there's nothing normal about this. And they're also, I'm hearing, reading, I think in your reports, there's a kind of timeline approaching. This cannot go on. I'm seeing people say 2020, it's not going to be a livable area.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been a UN Human Rights Organization report for a number of years now, saying that by 2020, at the latest, conditions will become unlivable. In many ways, they're unlivable now. Gaza has been compared to an open-air prison. In many ways, it's much worse than an open-air prison, because when you're in prison, and usually you know when your sentence is up, usually you can get visitors, usually they don't turn out the power for 20 of the hours of the day and, you know, have contaminated drinking water and no sewage treatment. So there's pretty bad conditions, and they are getting worse. They're getting unlivable. And as you say, the important thing that Bernie did is he brought to the world, helped bring to the world something that we've been doing for a while, which are Palestinian voices out of Gaza. One of our partners there is the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, which also represents the fishers, and we regularly bring their news out and work with them on that. And we also work with a group of young journalists, actually, you could get them on your show sometime, called We Are Not Numbers. We Are Not Numbers. You can look for a link on our site or just look for their Twitter. They're very active. They're aspiring and inspiring young journalists who've been working on their English, but more than that, working on telling their own story, saying, you know, you all see numbers out there. You see this many Palestinians killed. And behind every number, there's a human story. There's somebody who was, you know, studying for her exams while she went out to the return march, or somebody who, you know, just the unexpected human, helping prepare food, all those people, thousands of people mobilizing to go out to march to the fences. There's a lot of human stories behind that, or any other aspect of it, their relationship with the sea, their aspirations to, you know, go abroad and study. They're a fascinating bunch. They've done some videos. There's actually a video on our site called 6 Miles Out. They went out with the fishermen one night on their boats and documented what happened to them.
Wow.
But they're a crackerjack bunch. And, you know, ultimately, that's one of the greatest services we can serve here is to get their message out. So to encourage everybody to look at We Are Not Numbers. They're actually, like your station, in a fundraising phase right now. But they're an interesting bunch, and they've got a lot to say. And absolutely, you know, kudos to Bernie Sanders for publishing their own words, because really it's about regular people trying to go to have regular lives, return to their homes, get on with doing what they need to do. And they're demonized by media, who always, not media like CIUT, but the main corporate media, they're demonized and turned into some kind of terrorist puppet or something, which is couldn't be farther from the truth.
Yeah. Well, David Heap, Freedom Flotilla Coalition, we're really grateful that you gave us the time. We're going to keep following it. We have to take your cue on talking to the Palestinian young journalists as well. And, of course, it's CanadaBoatToGaza.org. People can donate and help see that this goes on, right?
Yep, and follow us. The most after the funds, we always say the campaigns have three parts. We raise awareness, we raise funds, and we raise hell. Yeah. So follow us, follow what the boats are doing. And stay in touch. There's only a limited number of space for a limited number of people on board, but there's room for everybody on board this movement, and you can all be passengers on land and follow the boats on your screens, in your hearts, and in your words. Get in touch with your elected officials and tell them this has to stop. Canada has to stop being complicit with the blockade of Gaza and the occupation of Palestine.
Well, thank you, David. We'll talk
again. Thanks, Phil. Good to speak to you as always.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
Take care.
This is Taylor Report. That was David Heap. You might remember his wonderful father was a member of Parliament. He represented Spadina, right?
He did. He did. He was a downtown guy. You know. And he was a city councilor before that.
City councilor. A great story. As I said, it's a Taylor Report. I think we'll take before we take a break, Phil, tell people how they can be in touch or
SoundCloud.com/Taylor-Report. And you will find an archive of all the wonderful stuff you hear here on the Taylor Report. And you can also go to Facebook, and we're the Taylor Report on Facebook.
Facebook.com/ The Taylor Report. Am I right?
You're right.
I'm slowly learning it.
But you don't have to do the Facebook.com.
Just I come here every
open
Monday.
Your Sooner Facebook later, account I'm gonna remember and do the Taylor Report, and you're going to find us there.
Yeah, just put that's right. The world at our doorstep. Well, we're going to take a break. And we'll come back and talk to Fred Jerome, we hope.